Hi, and welcome to Do La La, the podcast.
With me, Leanne from Birthhood, and Meg from Birth Evolution. We are both birth and postnatal doulas with over 12 years' experience supporting people through pregnancy, birth, and the postnatal period.
In this podcast, we'll be taking a deep dive into birth in a relaxed and informal space, bringing you knowledge, experience, and tips in a way that supports you, whether you are pregnant, working in the birth world, or just a birth nerd like us.
We'll be leaving no stone unturned with our unfiltered approach to conversation about birth and can't wait for you to join us.
All opinions are, of course, our own, and our experiences and discussions in no way constitute medical advice.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Do La La, the podcast with me, Leanne from Birthhood.
And me, Meg from Birth Evolution. Hello.
Hello. So, today, our episode is focused around vaginal examinations. This is something that I think, one of the main reasons we're bringing this up is because most people kind of assume that this is a compulsory thing when it comes to pregnancy and labour and birth. So it's something that I get asked a lot, and I'm sure you get asked a lot by your clients. And it's something that I think, actually, if we put podcasts out there, it might give everybody an opportunity to learn a little bit more about what they are, why they're needed, kind of, are they needed? What are the risks? We're going to do a nice little overview for you all today on that. So, Meg, I'm going to ask you to tell me what are vaginal examinations?
Sure, just before I start, pointless. I'm going to tell you a funny story because my husband messaged me the other day because he knew I was going into our nearest local town, and he was wondering if he was going to be able to meet me because he said, oh, I've got to go to I've got to pop to the VE shop. It's like
EE.
Yeah, turns out he was telling me the EE shop. And I was like, so all I had, because I knew we were going to be doing this podcast recording, and all I could picture in my head was like some kind of high street venue where you could go rock up and get your, you know, affordable VE. Really tickled me. Luckily, he is a partner of a birth worker, so he knew exactly where I went with the mention of VE straight away. Anyway, there are no VE shops. VE's vagina examination is kind of does what it says on the tin, but it is where a healthcare provider that could be a midwife, usually would be a midwife, but could also be a consultant, would insert fingers into your vagina with the purpose of reaching your cervix. And what then happens depends on what they're trying to gain information about. So the most common reason for a vagina examination would be in order to assess the state of the cervix. So they would be feeling the cervix. If they can feel the cervix, they are feeling whether it is ripe or not. Hate that phrase, ripe. But basically, is the cervix softening from where it would be ordinarily? So your cervix, if you were to feel your own cervix pre-pregnancy, then it would feel a bit like the end of your nose. It would feel quite resistant. But then progressing through the stages of becoming ready for birth, it would really, really soften until it feels really flexible and squidgy, like your lip or your earlobe. They're also feeling for whether that cervix is tilted in a particular direction. So the vast majority of cervix.
I don't know. Cervixes.
Anyway,
no,
it's not important. Google it. So the vast majority of cervixes are tilted towards the posterior. They're slightly tilted towards your bottom. And then again, during that process of ripening towards birth, the cervix actually tilts forward to become more central. So they can feel... Go on. What is it?
Cervices.
Cervices? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cervices. How interesting. Plural cervices. Cervixes.
I don't like the connection between a cervix and a service.
Yeah, say ugh.
I don't like that your cervix could be a service. Anyway, So you've got how soft it is, you've got what position it's in. It can also assess how thick your cervix is. So outside of pregnancy and certainly outside of labour, the cervix will be I'm holding my I'm literally just sat holding my fingers up, which is not helpful on a podcast at all. It's about yay big. No. About 3 centimetres, an inch or so thick, something like that. But by the end of labour, towards birth, it will be barely detectable, paper thin. It will thin right out. And then the thing that we're all obsessed with, which no doubt we'll touch on, is how open your cervix is. That is probably the most common application of that procedure in terms of what it is. It's inserting fingers into the vagina to reach the cervix and make an assessment of something in that area, usually an assessment of how ready or what sort of state your cervix is in.
I think the for me, the irony is for most people, when they agree to an examination, the information they are told and the information they are looking for is how dilated you are. However, all of the things that you've just said are also what needs to happen to a cervix in order to get ready for birth. And we ignore them for whatever reason. So we kind of put so much pressure on dilation, which that is only one small part, which means you can
and
feel
the later
really
part
like,
as well.
It's much, it's, yeah, it much comes, it's the last thing that happens.
Last part. So if you are, say, told that your cervix is 1-2 centimeters in terms of open, but it's really soft, really central, it's really showing signs of thinning, then that's brilliant, that's really exciting.
Amazing.
But because we're obsessed with only the numbers, no, you're not told that at all.
But that's so, one thing I want to add really quickly is,
go on,
just take control. If you agree to one at any point, which we're going to go through all of those sorts of reasons in a moment, ask for that information, because it's actually called the Bishop score. It's something that you can be told, which when, for example, if you're potentially looking at maybe having an induction, you'll have this to gain a Bishop score to know how effective this induction could be. But equally, when anybody can ask those questions, can't they, in terms of, well, okay, that's how dilated I am, but what's the position of my cervix, what was the, if you agree to it, which is obviously part of the next thing. And I think one of the main reasons that VEs are suggested is and accepted so readily by us as a nation is because we want to know where we are in
time, how long have we got, what have we been doing. Yeah, well, the sentence that we always hear, we just need to do an examination to see how far along you are.
When that doesn't exist.
It's the obsession with rulers, measurements, how far we are. Are we at the destination? How near are we to the destination?
Was it linear? What's it called? What's the word? Linearity. That's not the right word.
Linean. How linear it is. Linearness.
We're clearly not awake today, are we? But yeah, birth isn't linear. So to say we're going to have a VE to see where you are at, how far along you are, along what path? Because there isn't a linear
path.
That's
fine if all you want to know is where you are at in that single moment.
That moment.
That's fine. Yeah. But that's not what they're trying to identify at all. No. Because if that was all they were trying to check on, that doesn't actually tell you really anything. So it's not really that helpful at all. The only purpose of finding out where we're at now is so that somebody can place a judgment and a potential intervention on you for what is to come. Well, I say only because you're talking about why are they suggested, and we're obviously going to come back a lot to dilation and all that kind of thing, but there are some other reasons why this examination procedure might be done. So if there was a concern over the position of the baby, so if the cervix is favourable and open, a vagina examination would allow the healthcare provider to make contact with the baby's head, assuming it's a head presentation, or whatever is presenting. So by way of a vagina examination, it would also be possible to check the presentation of the baby. So whether actually there's not a head there, there's a foot or a bum, or if there is a head there, is it the brow? Is it the crown of the head? And obviously they're hoping that it will be the crown of the head. Sometimes babies present in all kinds of different ways. So there is additional information about the presentation of the baby that you can gain from a vagina examination, but I think we generally assume it's usually for progress. Which is not an accurate measure.
No, Event. And I think as a doula, I think you'll probably agree as well. I have been with clients where they have agreed to examination, and I would say probably very few actually do agree in, to be blatantly honest, because many are not, they know that it's unless there's a medical need to find something out, it's often unnecessary. Yeah. But those that do, it's because there might be an indication, and it is, from my experience, is that there's a delay, a malpresentation that is perceived based on the progress or lack of progress.
Like the behaviours. So
the behaviours, yeah, that we're exhibiting. And although we don't necessarily need to know, because it can actually, it's sometimes knowing that baby's not in an optimal position can actually put more stress on you as an individual than not knowing. And that's where your choice comes in, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But equally, sometimes that would be a point where someone would say, let's agree to this because I want to know.
And ultimately, it's a valid choice in birth. Having a vagina examination, you want a vagina examination, 100% have a vagina examination, because it is your choice and you might want that information. We've said in other podcast episodes that it isn't as simple as just, you know, say no. You can say no. Just because you can say no doesn't mean you have to. Yeah, and it's nobody else's business whether you choose to have an examination or not.
No.
It can provide people with really valid information and information that's really helpful to them, particularly people who absolutely are happy to wait and keep going on with labour. They just want to know where they're at. Or, like you said, if something isn't shifting and isn't ramping up, there's some absence of productive progress, mm-hmm, according to the person who's labouring and how they feel, it might be that a check for position internally is really, really helpful. But so can, I mean, we are alluding to it, but ultimately, can you say no?
Just say no.
There we go. The end.
No, the end. Thank you for joining. No. ultimately, it's your birth, your body. If you don't want them, you can say no. Many of my clients often opt out of vagina examinations. Because we're going to talk about the benefits and risks of them, kind of in a moment. But a lot of people that I work with, once they've learned about them, learned about the benefits and risks, learned about physiology of birth, they kind of go, unless there's a true medical indication that something isn't right, there is no need to have one, because actually the benefits of it don't outweigh the risks. Me knowing how far dilated I am or how whatever can actually have a really negative effect on my mindset, and actually it doesn't help me and my birth, so there's absolutely no point. Equally, you can opt for them if you want to, and you can change your mind at any point.
Yeah.
I think for me as a doula, when I'm working with clients who say no, my job would be to kind of go, like, you have said no to this, are you sure you want one? And if you do, that's absolutely fine, but remember, let's have a conversation. What frustrates me is that you can have it written down on your plan that you don't want them and then still get offered them. And then no other alternatives are suggested to you instead of that offer. So let's say, for example, you're in labour, it starts to slow down. Something like it could just be slowing down because you're having a bit of rest and digest stage to prepare for the next part. Or it could be that baby's malpositioned and it's slowing down because it can't carry on. A midwife would, based on guidelines, offer a VE at this point to assess what's going on. And as you said earlier, it sometimes does give us an indication of like dilation and kind of what part of the body's presenting. So I understand that as something, but often that's not what is presented to the client.
Yeah.
Equally, no other alternative. So, okay, we're having a bit of a stall. What could this mean? It could mean that baby's not presented very well, so there's not much pressure on the cervix, which could be causing a delay. So what can we do instead? Let's try blah, blah, blah. But that is often, well, I'd say, not. I don't think I've been with a client once where a midwife has offered an alternative to a VE.
Depends on the reason for it. So if they are being offered it because it's been 4 hours,
yeah,
then in a way there's no need for an alternative because it's literally just for their notes, for their their time scales. If it's because of a check about positioning or there's a concern of some sort, even if that's only really coming from the midwife, then really there has to be the option of, we'd like to do this. If you say no, then we're still concerned, so let's try this stuff instead. Because otherwise, in that situation, if my midwife is saying, I'm a bit concerned about progress, I'd like to do a VE in order to check whatever, and there isn't any other alternative, my midwife's shown some questioning about something, I'm going to feel like I need to say yes.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there might be a problem, and how else am I going to... So it's almost like without empowering with alternatives, you're almost creating a compulsory...
Exactly.
...situation, aren't you?
And it's like, for me, I think if there's something presenting that a midwife would go, okay, I'm not quite sure why things are slowed down. If I do a VE, I might be able to know. Well, okay, as a midwife, you could, if there's no concerns, because baby's okay, mum's okay, but we're just having a bit of a slow, what other alternatives could we do? Actually, let's go and leave them alone, give them some rest. Let's try a couple of different positions. Mm-hmm. And then if in an hour nothing's changed, or there's a change in heart rate or temperature or whatever, then a VE might actually be something that is offered and could be something that is required and you gain a lot from. But
from alternatives, though, I would say, when just looking at one of the next questions that you wrote down was about when you might have one, and I think it's really common, what we're talking about now is during labor, but one of the most common points at which, if not the most common point to be offered and given a vaginal examination, would be at the start of labor, when somebody has gone into labor, water's gone or not, they go into hospital to get checked, or midwives come to their home to get checked, and it's almost like this. Was it Carly from Best Birth Company who talks about it being a passport, that it's almost like this, if you want to get through to the next stage of labour, the part of the passport check is stick two fingers up your vagina. So
I'll stick two fingers up your vagina.
Yeah. is this a tit for tat? Do we swap later? is in that scenario, they want to kind of have a baseline assessment of where your cervix is at. In that scenario, so no one's concerned about anything. It's literally just, where are we at? Then what are the alternatives? Because this isn't a concern. Yeah. This is just an assessment of progress and whether, basically, are you established in labour or not? And actually, what concerns me is flashbacks to COVID, when this was birth partners in sleeping bags in cars, and basically it was your birth partner's not coming in unless we can feel your cervix. So what alternatives are there to check? I mean, we should ultimately just go in with the person, but to assess, is labour established? Like, what's...
Yeah, what happens to physiology? What happens to, like, in... anyway, what alternatives? So I would say observation is one of the key things. And I don't mean, because observation is not like conducive to birth, in the fact to have sitting there someone watching you, because that's not good. But as a midwife or as a doula, someone who just check in and making some kind of like mental notes of what is happening with this person. Their contractions are quite regular, they're quite long, they are increasing in intensity, she's starting to really move and change positions instinctively when she's having them, like the kind of how she's breathing's changing, she can't communicate between contractions as well as she was. Do you know, there's all these little signs behavioral, which to me, this is where kind of doulas, I think, really support physiological birth, is the fact that because you're with them usually in that gap between a help, like initial labour and seeing a midwife, is that you've watched that change. So we feel quite confident, don't we, go in, we've seen this, we know that it's changing. Whereas sometimes you could go in somewhere, or a midwife could come and go, actually, no, I think we're not, I don't think we're quite ready for the pool yet. And you just look and think, No, they are because they might look really calm, but where they've got to now from that point, and that's where time is a good alternative, isn't it? It's giving you some time to kind of see what's happening. Alternatively, there's loads of little signs to know what is happening in your body. So things like, so the back of your sacrum, when babies really getting low in the pelvis, does move outwards, and it's not always visible for everybody, but for many people, and again something that both you and I have seen, the sacrum, it's called the rhombus of Michaelis, moves outward, and you can see that baby's clearly down in the pelvis because the sacrum has moved out. So again, that is an alternative to VE because you can see it. Literally, it is something that you go, okay, baby, if baby is that low and the sacrum has moved away, we know that likely the circus is going to be very dilated at this
point.
And
it's not something you go, right, sweetheart, can you pull your knickers down so I can look at your bum and see if there's a rhombus of Michaelis there? It's at that point, often the person in labour is likely to be semi-dressed anyway, and it's something you could probably look and glance at without much, if any, speaking and questioning and things.
Exactly.
Which is the least conversation, the better.
It's not intrusive either. And VEs are very intrusive. If you are nice and calm and breathing, and then all of a sudden, right, can we get you on your back? Can you bring your feet up to your bum? Can you drop your knees? Can you relax? I'm going to insert my fingers into your vagina.
It is seriously intimate. And when in any other part of your life would you basically be prevented from doing something until somebody put two fingers inside you? It is it's really intimate, and for a lot of people this isn't just I've done a hypnobirthing course and I decided I don't want a vagina examination because I've been told they're not very for some people this is a significant risk of trauma, re-traumatizing, triggering from previous experiences. But likewise, it doesn't matter what your reasons are for not wanting that you never have to justify not having a vagina examination. It's a valid, and you never have to justify why you might want one, even though you said you weren't going to have one. Nobody should ever request a justification for anything. It's just you make that choice.
But you feel you do, don't you? Because that perceived hierarchy, you feel you must give a reason, because otherwise you are.
But
being
the system struggles with it because the system wants to know. The notes must have centimeters on. But let's cut to the nitty gritty then. What are the benefits of having a vagina examination? I suppose we've talked about position and things, so assessing position could be one. What are there any benefits from knowing how dilated you are?
This is difficult for me to say, because personally I say no. I will never judge my doula clients for their choices for this, and it's completely theirs. And they might find a benefit of knowing, because to them they go, actually, knowing I'm 4 centimetres means that I've got a certain distance and I'm doing this, and it gives me that power. Whereas for me, my personal thing would be there isn't a benefit, because I don't need to know where I'm at in order, because it's going to happen anyway. And because I think I know it, because I know it's not linear, knowing doesn't help me personally. But equally, I think a benefit as a general could just be that for a particular person who is driven by numbers, it might go, I think the benefit for that one is bigger.
The other one I can think of is when it comes to pain relief and medication. So things like administering something like pethidine for pain relief, that it's better to avoid having pethidine within a certain time frame
of the
perception of when the baby might be born. So it might be, if somebody is wanting pethidine, that a vagina examination to check where they're at. Obviously, you still are not going to know how long it is before the baby's been born, but perhaps that might give some indication as to how comfortable a midwife is administering that medication, because they're trying to avoid it being too close to birth. With medications, if they want to make sure that there's time enough. But I think it's still worth saying that you know, I've been with somebody before. The two stories I usually tell are the person who was examined and told she was 5 centimetres. She then threw up, which was an indicator of, hang on a minute, you sure that's 5 centimetres? She stumbled over to the birth pool, got in the birth pool, started making significantly different noises to what she was making before, demanded an epidural. We're in a birth centre because in her head, she'd heard 5 centimetres. Things had ramped up massively. She perceived that 5 centimetres meant there was ages left and she wasn't going to be able to cope for that long at the intensity it was at. What she didn't realise was the intensity was that because she was about to give birth, and she gave birth 23 minutes later.
Yeah.
The other example is at a home birth where she had an examination and was 2 centimetres. The midwives could easily have said, oh, this is going to be quite a while. We'll go and call us when things get, you know, more intense. They knew from, she was only 2 centimetres, but they knew from looking at her and listening to her that things had were picking up. They said, no, we're not going anywhere. And she had the baby in her arms 90 minutes later. Mm. So in terms of benefits, it's never going to give you the time scale. But I think with real answer medication, and if you're the kind of person who just feels they really need to empower some control over where they're at, but there's nothing clinic aside from medical, you know, the presentation of the baby, there's no real clinical benefit in terms of knowing how long you've got left, and it's not going to tell you that.
No, and that's, I think that's where I agree with everything that you've just said. I think I just struggle with them massively, because I know that they're often overused so much, and I think that the negatives outweigh the benefits so much. And actually, those benefits that you've said are accurate, but often not, that you don't see that used enough. Does that make sense?
Well, you don't see vaginal examinations may be used in those contexts, but that's not. That's a drop in the ocean compared to the context that we're using them in. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So that's why.
So what are the what are the risks then of a?
Well, one of them we've kind of drawn on the fact that the mindset is one of the biggest things. I would want, not one of the biggest things. It's a key thing though, because if you go, you're only 2 centimetres, that's really difficult. But again, remembering the cervix has to do so much before you dilate. Mm-hmm. So if you're 2 centimetres, actually, you've done brilliantly.
You're doing
but
amazing.
Again, that's where a doula or a good midwife can reframe things for you. But if you don't know all of that stuff about cervix, that dilation seems ridiculous, and you go, well, how the hell can I do this for X amount of time? And then we know the negative impacts that will have on your birthing hormones, which can mean your birth just slows down significantly.
We desperately need oxytocin, and you are not going to get your surges of oxytocin from potentially being shifted in position and having someone poke at you.
Yeah, so that's for me, that's huge. And I think the other one that's probably, again, if you speak to people when they tell me that they've had an infection, and then they go, I had probably 10 vagina examinations, and you go, you wonder, and then you wonder why they've got an infection, and you look at their birth notes and it doesn't say anything that connects the 10 examinations to that infection.
And of course, nobody can guarantee those examinations caused that infection, because they may have had no examinations and still had an infection.
Still got an infection.
But that's what all of this is about, balancing risk, right? So I've got here, it's an AIMS guide to induction of labour, and it's talking about PROM, which is, it is pre-labour rupture of membrane. So basically when your waters go, but labour doesn't start. So it's talking about ultimately inducing someone because their waters have gone, but labour hasn't started. But interestingly, it also talks about infection risk linked to your waters going. But it talks about if your waters have gone. So these statistics relate to if someone's waters have gone already, which does obviously increase the risk of infection, because they haven't got that bubble of amniotic fluid or the amniotic sac sealed around the baby. But the impact of vaginal examinations on the risk of infection is quite significant. So this is a study from Seaward in 1997, which says that after waters have gone with no labour starting. There is a 2% of mothers were diagnosed with infection with less than 3 vaginal examinations. That doubled with 3 to 4 examinations. That almost doubles again with 5 to 6 examinations. And it's 13% of mothers diagnosed with infection at 7 to 8 examinations. With 8 or more examinations, the percentage of mothers diagnosed with infection is 20%. That's a fifth of, and I apologise for the highly gendered language, but that's a fifth of people have an infection with 8 or more vaginal examinations, and it kind of says it for itself, doesn't it? So we need to acknowledge that a risk of vaginal examinations, particularly repeated vaginal examinations, this kind of every 4 hours for a prolonged period, whether someone's gloved or not, whether they've washed their hands or not, whether they're in a hospital environment, or it does, there is going to be a risk of infection. It really.
I had a call with a client and the head of midwifery and a consultant midwife to get an individualised care plan in place for a VBAC client who wants a birth at birth centre, which is all going ahead lovely. But one of the questions was, do you consent to a VE when you get there? Because that is our policy. She said, no. She said, right. And then the head of midwifery said, that's your choice, like you don't have to have one, but if we do, it'll give us more of an indication as to kind of where we go. And then we do offer them every 4 hours, which we then expect you to make 1 to 2 centimetres progress every 4 hours. So it gives us an indication of how long and what pain relief. And I just went, right, I was with my client on the call, and I just said, we'd already obviously had this conversation, and I said, but that isn't evidence-based. She was like, no, but it is policy and it has been proven to be helpful. I said, to you or to the two clients? They was like, well, she can't answer it because she know it doesn't help the clients. She said, well, it's optional, you don't have to agree. And my client was like, I don't want them, I don't want one on entry, I don't want one regularly. She was like, if I change my mind on the day because I feel it's necessary, that's my choice, but I want you to put no EVs down, please. And they did try a little bit more and go, well, and I'm like she said, and I just had to go, like, she's lovely. Like, they are lovely people, these midwives. Mm. But equally, there is no evidence to suggest that that is accurate or gives any indication positively. So it's something that we all need to be aware of, that you are going to be offered it. You feel like it's necessary. You often agree to it. And then once you agree to it once, there's an assumption you're going to agree to it every 4 hours. But yeah. Every time you have one, you're increasing. Well, it's uncomfortable. It's risking infection. It's invasive. There's all these things. The irony, and this is where I want to get, this is what I found really hilarious, is the irony of them saying in this particular thing that they linked it to continuous monitoring, and we prefer to use telemetry in the birth centre. Because continuous monitoring is better. I was like, well, it's not. But anyway, that's a different one. Because it is less invasive than using intermittent monitoring. And I was like, but you want to do VEs every 4 hours? Like, getting them out the pool, And she was like, I understand what you're saying. And I'm just like, you sat there and I just think, do you know what? Like,
we're kind of chasing the tail a little bit.
Yeah, it's scary. But yeah, that's it's intrusive.
We've mentioned this a few times about position change. So just going back to like the practicalities of a vaginal examination, that a lot of cases are where somebody who is having a vaginal examination for whatever reason is urged to become reclined, whether that's coming off their knees and laying back, or whether that's getting out of a pool, whatever that is, getting into a optimal position for the person doing the vaginal examination. It's well worth knowing that you do not have to move out of the position you are in. That a vaginal examination can be done in a whole variety of positions. I've seen it done in all manners of different positions. You can have a vaginal examination whilst bent over on all fours in the pool. You can have a vaginal examination lying on your side. You could be lying on your back if you want to. You could be, you know, it's not as clear cut as just, if you want me to do it, you have to be on your back. And actually, if a midwife is saying you need to get on your back and you need to move onto your back, actually the question needs to be, if you can't do this vaginal examination with me in this position, then the answer is no. That's not a case of, for us to do this, you have to do this. Now, don't get me wrong, there are likely to be particular positions that might be restrictive let's not say that you can have a vaginal examination in any position, but there is a huge variation, and in a pool is still possible to have a vaginal examination and not have to get out. So it's being, it's compromising. And if you are consenting to a vaginal examination, that's fine, but they need to meet your needs and not expect you. If this is going to be unintrusive, then that needs to allow you to remain where you are if possible.
It needs to not be detrimental to you in a number of ways, like, because it's it's bloody uncomfortable. I mean, I say that, I've not had one, but I can imagine. I've had a smear test and I know that's not comfortable. And if you're having contractions, it's definitely not going to be comfortable. And if then, and it's intrusive, you're having some random person's hand in your vagina when you're trying to produce these hormones of safety and love and to birth and meet your beautiful baby, and yet you've got to stop what you're doing and allow that to happen. Like, again, if that is something that you need and want, then it has to be in a way that supports you. And we, to be in a society where we're told, no, you have to do this, no, you have to do that, let's just bring it back and go, no, you don't have to do anything. If it's something that needs to be done, their job is to make like subtle changes and adaptations to meet your needs. Like, it's their job to do that. You're not that, you don't have to change things to suit them. They need to change things to suit you. And I think that's the key thing. But do you have any, like, any kind of last minute kind of overwhelming conversation?
I think ultimately this is, it is part of maternity practice. And we know that, and we know it is policy in all trusts for it to be 4-hourly during established labour and offered examination on entry to a facility. We know all of that, and we know it's that's not going to change, because it is perceived that vaginal examinations are evidence-based and have their purpose in, you know, the note-taking and recording and assessment of a labouring person. So it's about bringing in the human, it's bringing in you as an autonomous adult to make that decision of, do you want it, but also, do you understand why it's being offered?
Why?
Is there a benefit to you? And if there is a benefit to you and that outweighs any risk to you, crack on.
Yeah.
If there is no benefit to you, and as far as you're concerned, the risks outweigh any benefit that you can think of for you, then it's a no-brainer that if the only benefit is for the system, as in the computer system, the handwritten notes, whatever, then is that something you should consent to? Because all of this should only ever be if there is benefit for you and your baby. And don't get me wrong, I think there are circumstances where a vaginal examination can be of benefit to you and your baby.
Yeah.
But I don't think those circumstances are anywhere remotely close to the frequency with which vaginal examinations are given.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think my final, like, addition is following on from exactly what you're saying, and that is that you weigh up the benefits and risks. Otherwise, if we are blindly saying yes, we know for a fact that the frequency then that they are done, and then the cascade of interventions that would likely follow from that because of lack of progress, because of XYZ, means that it can have, one simple VE could have such a negative knock-on effect on you as you progress.
Everything
down.
Has an implication, doesn't it?
Everything. So you've got to make sure that it is absolutely, the benefits absolutely outweigh the risks, and then you are the one in the driving seat. And I would say that would be my final kind of... I think one thing I didn't say in this, and something that I do want to is to bring up in another podcast, is that a VE is very different to a membrane sweep, but sometimes that sweep can be done during during a VE. So be aware that they are different things, but sometimes can be brought together. So again, that is another a risk of having a VE.
I think it's worth putting in this podcast episode, though, absolutely, because when you consent to a vagina examination, you are not consenting to having a sweep. I don't think we should go into necessarily all the ins and outs of that.
No.
We could do a whole episode on sweeps. but
yeah,
they are two separate procedures to be consented to. One can take place during the other, but if you've consented to an examination and then a sweep is done without an additional consent, that is a significant intrusion and a form of assault, not to put too fine a point in it. So, yeah, definitely separate those. In terms of
it was something that just cropped up and I was like, gosh, I meant to mention really that in the risks that actually it's really definitely important that you know that they are different things, and that leads to its own, like, say, its
and one
own
doesn't have to include the other.
No. Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, that's brilliant. The nutshell, gang, and I hopefully you've all learnt something.
Don't go to your local EE shop requesting one.
Don't, please don't. But yeah, I think if you want to ask, if you want to find out more about vagina examinations, you know where we are, you know, and we'll again in the we'll give you some more follow up things that you can look into.
Absolutely.
But thank you for joining us.
Yay, it's been great again. Lovely chatting to you about vaginas, Leanne.
We
do love this stuff.
We do, don't we?
Talk about the best stuff. Brilliant.
Anyway,
we'll catch you all later on another episode.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to Do La La, the podcast.
With me, Leanne from Birthhood.
And me, Meg from Birth Evolution. It's been great to have you here with us as we chat about all things pregnancy, birth and postnatal.
We'd love to know what you think, so please do leave us a review. Follow both Meg and I on socials and share with your friends too. They'll be really glad you did.